What if it rained food? What if Earth was a cube? What if we had nine lives? What if bits could fly? It's absurd. If money grew on trees, if we didn't have these, if we walked through life slightly magnetical, it's absurd. Absurd hypotheticals.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Absurd Hypotheticals, the show where we overthink dumb questions so you don't have to. I'm your host, Marcus Lehner, and I'm joined here today by Chris Yee and Ben Storms. Say hi, guys.
Hey, I'm Chris.
Hey, I'm Ben.
I don't give a shit what you guys want to talk about, because I met my brand new nephew over the weekend.
Ooh, brand new nephew. What's his name?
His name is Sebastian.
Sebastian.
He is 2.5 weeks old, and he is fucking adorable.
Are they calling him Sebastian, or is there a nickname?
Seabass.
It's unclear if there was a nickname. My brother-in-law called him Seb once, which I think would be the nickname, but whether that sticks and if it's the real nickname I can use, I don't know. I was told by my parents, who probably aren't in the know, that it's full name Sebastian, no nickname. But Sebastian's a very long name not to have a nickname for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like Christopher, which I always hate saying, because it's so long.
As a Benjamin, I agree.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, as a Marcus, I don't let people shorten my name to Mark.
Well, it seems like the three syllable is the threshold.
Yeah, two syllables is fine. Three syllables is just too much.
It's just clunky.
It really is a lot to get out on, like, short notice, you know?
Yeah, especially, like, if there's, like, something urgent, like, you need to make Sebastian, like, stop, like, putting his finger in an electrical socket or something. Three syllables could be the difference between life and death.
Like, he's not gonna respond until you finish his name.
Well, and importantly, if he already responds to, like, the start of the name, he's already responding to Seb anyways. Just say it and save yourself some time.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see how that story develops.
Are there four syllable names? I can't think of one right now.
Bartholomew.
Antonio.
Oh, there's two. Okay.
We're just way better at names than you, Chris. Get a fucking baby book for once in your life.
Yes, I did count on my fingers before saying that one.
And I counted after you said it.
In my head, Bartholomew had anywhere between like 4 and 7 syllables, so I figured I was safe.
Yeah, that's a safe assumption.
I'm like, it just keeps going.
Michelangelo. There we go. That's 5.
Also Alexander. That's one.
Yeah, that's a more common one.
Yes.
Wow, I can't believe people really tuned into our podcast to listen to us to think of 4-syllable names.
Yep.
All right, second hot take on babies. They don't do a lot very early on in the process. Apparently, like, at this stage, he, like, cannot see more than a foot in front of his face. So everything is a blur, and, like, his hearing isn't great yet. So he really just has no...
So he doesn't know who you are yet. He didn't see your face.
Oh, I got close enough to being a foot. I gotta get in that radius.
Marcus, I know that it probably wasn't like this, but that sounds like you terrified this child. Oh, I got close enough. Don't worry.
I could not have terrified this child if I tried, because this child can sleep through the zombie apocalypse. Like, we came in, it was me, my folks, my grandmother, Sarah, and then them two there. So 7 people in the house, and then plus the baby. And we all came in, started talking, saying hi. We're, like, shouting to each other from, like, one room to the other, while my sister's in the middle of the living room, like, holding the baby, being like, no, it's okay, you don't have to keep your voice down. And it was true. That baby slept for 1.5 hours with 7 people, like, in the same room. Like, just having full-level conversations.
This seems like a very good quality to have in a baby.
Yeah, it's going to be very funny when this baby stops sleeping well in, like, a week when all its habits and personalities change.
Oh, yeah.
But, I'm the cool uncle for now. The other uncles haven't met the baby yet, so by default, I'm the coolest
one. How many other brothers do you have? I don't even know.
I have no actual sibling brothers, but he's going to have 2 uncles on my brother-in-law's side.
Okay, got it.
But, I mean, I think I'm still going to be the cool uncle because I got, like, a podcast and I make board games. And I do a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And I'm going to buy him all the Legos because then I get to play with his Legos because that's going to be awesome.
Because that's what the cool uncle does, steal their Legos.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, you don't steal the Legos. You get them the cool Legos. But just when you're there, you play with the kid in the Legos. And maybe the kid gets forgotten somewhere in between and you have a cool fucking castle. And everyone's like, wow, what a cool castle you built.
And the baby's actually inside.
Yes, you build the baby in, and it's like not only is it a castle, also a crib, and like you flip open the top, and the baby's in there on a Lego bed that somehow you've made comfortable with, I guess, like the rounder bricks. Not too many of the sharp ones.
They have the smooth-faced bricks, right?
Yeah, everyone knows that as long as it's smooth, it's fine and comfortable.
Yeah.
That's why everyone still sleeps on marble slabs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, other than that, he's 2.5 weeks old, so there's not too much to tell. So I think I'm going to move out of my uncleship and into my podcast hosting ship. And we're going to dive into the next question, which is, what if you could perfectly train snakes? Chris, tell me what you got. What did you do with snakes?
So I looked at a specific snake called the Chrysopelea, also known as the flying snake.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Like the mythical ones with the wings.
Mm-hmm. They don't have wings.
I think they call them wyverns.
Oh. They call them what?
The ones with the wings are wyverns. They're like dragons, but no legs.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Play more video games, please.
Well, these actually exist. They don't have wings, but I actually didn't know they existed until I started looking up cool snakes, and they terrify me. So what they actually do, they don't actually fly. They glide. So what they do is they have like these ridge scales on their stomachs, which helps them like climb vertically up trees and stuff. It helps them grip the bark. And then once they get to the top of the tree, they dangle themselves off of a branch, like half of their body off the branch. They like look around to see where they want to go. And once they pick a destination, they spring their body and launch off of the tree. And when they're midair, what they do is they flatten their body and they widen it and they like spread out their ribs so that they're like basically
Wait,
just
what?
Flat. Yeah.
They basically like turn themselves into a wing that undulates.
Kind of, yeah. So they're still they're still long, but they're just like flatter and wider.
I'm just getting over the mental image right now of the rib cage like opening.
I don't actually know how their ribs are like configured in their body. I feel like it's like throughout their whole body.
Yeah, they have ribs all the way down. That's like, if you look at a snake skeleton, it's just spine and ribs.
Right. And all the descriptions I read said that they flare them out. So apparently they move their ribs.
I think that they're like slightly flexible or something almost. I looked into this a little bit too, just because I was interested in it and I wanted to steal your thunder apparently. I think that they like almost like, yeah, like they like flex them out with like the muscles and up their snakeness.
That's still super gross. Like,
oh yeah,
it
definitely is
pretty gross.
When I imagine, like, you know, like it's like a wing. Like, imagine like you have a human wingsuit, but instead of having the wingsuit, you just like grab your fucking rib cage and pull it open. And you're like, I'm good to go.
That's pretty much it.
That's basically what they're doing.
That's horrible.
Yeah, and what this does, it actually widens their body. It like doubles the width of their body, and it creates like a cross section that resembles a frisbee, basically. And the cross-section of a frisbee is designed to increase air pressure underneath it, like under the center, which creates lift and it like pushes it upwards. And that's what happens with the snake. So the snake undulates its body, and it's like slithering back and forth in the air with its flat body, and it creates air pressure underneath and it pushes it up and lets it glide. And they actually consume less energy traveling like this than they do traveling on the ground.
Well, I mean, they're just like jumping and... Gliding is good for energy. Like, animals that glide have it fucking figured out, man. Well, birds have it figured out. This snake is a horrendous, like, freak of nature and has not figured it out.
Yeah, birds are way better, probably, than the snake, but still cool, the snake.
Horrible, you mean? Horrible and terrible.
They're actually able to glide farther than flying squirrels and, like, other gliding animals. So they can glide up to 300 feet, which, just for context, is... It's about like 4/5 of a football field, or if the Statue of Liberty was turned on its side, it's the height of the Statue of Liberty.
Damn.
Yeah, so it's pretty far. They can go far, and they can actually like make adjustments midair, so they can like sort of turn. I don't think they have complete control, but they can like guide themselves.
Now, are flying squirrels and flying snakes in the same habitat?
I don't know.
I want to see the Nat Geo special where like this, you're following this flying squirrel that like it's like, look how far they can glide, and then just right above it a fucking snake is gliding and like keeping pace and then like just overtakes it and takes it down.
Well, I think these snakes are in like Southeast Asia. I don't know if they have flying squirrels there too, but it would be pretty cool to see. I think they do. Some of them eat birds, so I guess they like catch them in midair. That'd be pretty awesome to see.
That's just like getting robbed on the evolutionary chain. Like if you get taken out mid-flight, like high up by a snake, it's
if
like
you have wings and you get taken down by something without wings.
Right.
Yeah, I think you get like compensated with like free popcorn or something when you go up to like birdie heaven, where it's just like, yeah, you know, just like that happened, but yeah, we agree that was total bull.
Yeah.
here's some free cloud popcorn for you.
Cloud popcorn. Okay.
Sorry, I'm trying to very quickly create the entirety of Bird Heaven, and I don't have all the details worked out yet.
And
thank
your
you.
One thing of canon is cloud popcorn.
Look, the guy at the gate is Saint Tweeter, and that's all I got.
Okay. And then the one last little thing that I have is that these snakes range from 2 to 4 feet long. So they're not like super tiny, and they're not like huge either. Actually, I guess 4 feet is pretty big. But
that's bigger than I want them to be.
Yeah. I guess a 4-foot snake flying through the air is kind of terrifying. So I wanted to use these snakes somehow. I knew I wanted to use them, and I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do with them. But I was, like, determined to use them. So I was looking at, I was, like, trying to think of things that use flying things, and I couldn't think of anything. And then I came across this town, or there are some places in, like, southern Thailand where these snakes are common, and they just, like, hang out in, like, a human habitat with, like, a village, and they, like, hide in roofs and, like, potted plants. And, like, the description of this village was basically wherever you are in the village, you're guaranteed to have some of these snakes close to you.
I imagine those rental prices are pretty cheap.
Yeah. So I guess the snakes are just, like, hiding until, like, prey comes out and they, like, leap at them. They don't actually attack humans, and they are a little venomous. They're, like, mildly venomous, but they're not really dangerous to people. So people are okay around them. But just the idea of, like, them hiding places, like, close to you and striking at any moment.
Yeah, no, it doesn't make me feel good. Like, I imagine I would go to the hotel there, and they would be like, oh, yes, you may have noticed the snakes around. Yes, you're always within 3 feet of a snake, but they hardly ever attack humans. Poisonous? A little bit, but really, nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
They hardly ever bite people.
What I'm thinking of in my mind right now, there was a time when I was at Boy Scout camp when I was growing up, and I pulled my boots out from my bed, and a reasonably sized grasshopper jumped out at my face, and that scared the shit out of me, and I still hate grasshoppers because of it.
How big was the grasshopper?
Maybe like 3 inches long. So if a snake that was, you know,
4 feet long,
16 times longer than that were to jump at me, I would die. I would actually die.
Well, yeah, because they're poisonous.
Well, venomous. There's a difference. But yes.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, you're right. I could not tell you how many paragraphs.
Yeah, I read a lot of those
snake
too.
Research were like, snakes are not poisonous. Poison and venom are different.
Did you guys see the one snake that is poisonous? Sorry, quick aside.
I did not, no.
There's one snake that, sort of like a poison dart frog, it eats something that is poisonous and then stores the poison and like glands at its neck and uses it to ward off predators. It's pretty awesome.
Tell me that's your entire answer. Tell me that is pivotal to the thing that you did.
I could not make it work anywhere, no matter how hard I tried. I'm sorry, Marcus.
No!
But I'm glad I could share it here, because it's really cool. Anyway, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, so the idea of this village, I was kind of picturing like the scenario where all of them jump at once and you just have like a huge like mob of snakes flying through the air. And that got me thinking, confetti.
No.
That's what I'm going to do with these snakes.
No, you're not.
So, like,
stop.
Sporting events, like political parties, anything that requires confetti. Instead of confetti, you're going to get these flying snakes.
Can I give an alternate possibility?
Okay.
You know those prank cans that have, like, the fake snake inside?
Yes, that was my next thing.
Yes!
It's going to be a double prank because they're going to think it's fake, but it's a real snake.
Perfect.
Can I like make, I don't know, some suggestions that are preferable to the snake confetti?
No, that's what? As good as it gets.
Like hand grenade confetti, poison confetti, venom confetti.
Look, we can use them at sporting events. They can travel 4/5 of the distance of a football field. So they can like stay on like the roof of the stadium. And then
I would rather a helicopter go overhead and drop actual footballs from 500 feet up in the air to the stadium.
And then you could use them for like other party things too, like piñatas. You have a piñata full of snakes instead of candy and they jump out when you break it. Weddings, they release doves. You don't need to release doves. You can release snakes.
This is the worst. What is this world you want to live in? Go live this in this stupid like town with the flying snakes and leave me alone.
This is like my party planning company of snakes. Because what I'm else are you going to do with them?
I'm never visiting you again.
Yeah, that was basically all I had.
You get an F, Chris. A fucking F. F for flying snakes.
Ben, what did you look at?
So, similarly to Chris, I found a cool thing about snakes and worked my hardest to make it work. So, the thing that I learned about snakes is that some snakes can actually see infrared thermal radiation. Not, like, literally with their eyes, but they basically have, like, an extra set of sensors that basically just senses heat. And there's two different families of snakes that sort of separately evolved this. So it's Boidae, which is boas and pythons, and then Crotalinae, which is pit vipers. Pit vipers actually get the name from these pits. They basically are, they look kind of like extra nostrils, and they're sort of there on the nose as well.
Wait, so they don't actually see it with their eyes. They see it with something else.
Okay. Exactly. It's a separate, like, sensory organ. And basically, inside this little pit, there's a membrane stretch there that has, there's nerve cells in it that have this ion channel called TRPA1 that detects the infrared radiation as heat.
Oh, I always see that in my TV when I'm scrolling through the inputs. It's like HDMI1, HDMI2, VGA, and then
TRPA1. Yeah, it's the last one. You gotta skip through it to get back to TV. Yeah.
This is a channel that snakes watch.
Right, yeah. And basically the way it works is it always is kind of doing these electrical impulses from like the nerve firing, but then as the temperature changes, that speed increases. And the snake can actually, sort of the same way that like a pinhole camera works, it can, based on where the radiation is hitting on a membrane, pinpoint where the source of the heat is. It's pretty actually surprisingly accurate. Scientists theorize that it can detect variation down to around 0.001 degrees Celsius, which is kind of insane. And it's strong enough that they can hunt like, you know, mice and things in darkness. It's not super long distance, but somewhere from like a meter to a few meters, they can pretty accurately detect. A meter is sort of what they could like accurately detect from pretty reasonably. So this is really cool, obviously. This is awesome. Snakes have heat vision. Well, some snakes have heat vision. That's really cool. Is this useful at all to us? Was the question I had to answer. And it took me a while. Because the problem is, most of the things that you have to, like, sense heat with are really boring and better done with just, like, a thermometer. Because it's usually just, like, this thing is too hot, we need to cool it down now. And I didn't want to have a snake look at something and push a button to turn on a fan.
To have a snake look at someone's mouth and see if they're over temperature or not.
I actually thought about that. I tried to make snake doctors work so hard. That's actually why I looked up the snake that ingest poison. I was trying to figure out if you could like replace a snake's venom sacs with like medicine and use them to give people shots. I don't know. I was looking for a long time, guys.
You know, doctors aren't the only thing that need to know the exact temperature of things.
I got one. I'm getting there.
Oh, I hope you're going the same way I'm going.
We'll see. Where are you going? I don't think it's where I was going. Just knowing you.
All right, I'll say it first then and take away your thunder.
Sure.
Snake chef.
Nope. Not what I was going for. Don't think they can use a spatula.
But they could tell you exactly, they can tell exactly when that steak is medium
See,
rare.
See, but this comes back to my previous point of this works really well with just a thermometer.
No, because the snake doesn't have to like, you know, put it, you don't have to put it in the meat. The snake can just check it out. And then you can replace the poison with sauces and the snake can inject the meat with sauces.
But for two issues, I can't believe I'm actually dignifying this with a response. One, you would only be getting the surface temperature of the steak, Marcus. Duh. Two, they don't actually inject the poison, the one that ingests it, so it wouldn't actually work. I really tried to make that one work, but it didn't.
And to counterpoint myself, three, snakes would make bad chefs because they don't have hands.
This, yes, that is also, I mentioned the spatula thing. It came up. Anyway, what I did realize, an actually useful thing you can use this infrared quote-unquote sight for, is landmine detection. Because one of the ways that we do detect landmines now is actually with thermal imaging, because the landmine is a better insulator than soil. So during the day, the soil overhead is going to heat up faster and cool down faster at night than the soil around it. So you can actually see that as an anomaly in thermal imaging, which we do. we can actually do it from like pretty far away from like planes and stuff. The problem is it's really hard to process the images because you're looking at pretty small gradients of heat and stuff from that distance. But snakes are like custom made to process thermal images using their own sensors. So you have this fucking snake out there looking for mines. That's awesome. Unfortunately, small problem, landmines are a concern, but in the modern day, the bigger concern is improvised explosive devices, which are just like hidden bombs, which usually aren't buried and therefore you can't really do that with. So what we usually do with that is smell for them using animals. Or like there's machines to do it too, but animals are used for it. So dogs, obviously. You've probably heard about honeybees. They've been used to find explosives. That's a thing. Apparently, giant pouched rats. There's this Belgian NGO that trains giant pouched rats for $6,000 per rat to look for explosives.
Where's the pouch?
Yeah.
I didn't look up these rats. I'm assuming they're like...
Are they like cheek pouches? Like I imagine like a droopy rat face. Or is it like a kangaroo pouch? Maybe kangaroo
pouch. I guess pouch. Kangaroo pouch. I'm trying to Google it and failing. Oh god.
No, not a giant punch rat, damn it!
God,
I imagined it'd be called a giant pouch rat. The pouch has to be like a majority of their body.
Right. Giant...
They just live in their own
Oh pouch. Jesus, that's a big rat. Oh, that's a real big rat, guys. Oh no. Oh, I'm unhappy about this.
Quick, send it to the flying snake town. It'll never survive.
Oh god. They're Whoa. Really big. I also don't see a pouch. I don't know. The giant part is more important.
Oh, is the pouch not giant? Is the rat giant?
The rat itself is giant, yes. Oh, wow. These are big rats. I'm guessing it has a pouch somewhere, but I'm just more in shock of the size of this thing.
Apparently they eat bananas.
Yeah, I'm seeing that. It's a kind of common theme.
Oh, jeez.
These are big rats. Why? Anyway.
Why, buddies? Why, buddies?
Not important. Basically, they do it too. Other thing, elephants are actually apparently really good at finding TNT. Turns out, during the Angolan Civil War, elephants kept like fleeing out of the country to other countries, but then after the war ended, they came back, and a biologist realized the elephants actually learned to avoid them, and they're actually 5% more likely, they're actually more accurate than dogs at finding TNT. 6% less likely to miss a sample and 5% more likely to, like, flag something as being TNT. So, that's pretty cool.
Do they have, like, a reason?
The nose is much bigger, obviously.
Yeah, I think they just have a really good sense of smell. But if only snakes had a good sense of smell, too. Wait a minute, hold on. Turns out, snakes also have a pretty good sense of smell. And really coolly, they actually smell in stereo.
What does that mean?
So, snake tongues are forked, as we all know. Or we all know now, if you didn't already know. And they basically smell separately at the tip of each fork. And then bring that data back into they have like, it's called the Jacobson's organ. That's like the actual part that processes everything. It's actually scent and taste at once.
Are you allowed to name an organ after yourself as a scientist?
Apparently.
Like, paleontologists, yeah, you get to name the dinosaur after, like, your kid or whatever. But, like, organs, I don't think you just get to be like, oh, that one is the Jacobson organ.
So here's the thing, too. It's called the Jacobson's organ, like, possessive. He doesn't have one. He's not a snake.
Or is he?
Are all snakes secretly called Jacobson?
That is actually, I like that explanation more. Turns out they're all named Jacobson.
Also, I just want to verify one thing as we loop back around now.
Yes.
Do snakes smell with their tongue?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, I think that's what you're getting at.
Yeah.
What's the point of smelling stereo if their smell is coming from the same direction? Because, like, you're hearing in stereo because it's from both sides of your head.
Well, stereo is kind of... Oh, it's the same way that you see in stereo. It lets them basically get depth and direction than you do with a single sense of...
Got it.
Or a single... source of smell, because like we have two nostrils but we only have one actual place where there are receptors, so we don't do shit with that. We can't smell from our left. We can't smell from our left. That doesn't work.
To do it now.
Smell to the left, two sniffs this time, bam.
So as I see it, now we have like boa constrictors out looking for you know, IEDs and landmines and battlefields. And to loop back to the doctor thing, if you need, like, to apply pressure to a wound or, like, a tourniquet, It's a boa constrictor. They're really good at that. Like, really good at that. So, that's my idea, is, I guess, combination battlefield medic slash mine and bomb detector.
Interesting. More practical than mine.
I mean, most things are. Marcus, what did you have that's more practical than Chris's confetti?
So, I mean, all our talking has done, has at least especially what Chris was doing, has verified that snakes are bad. They are evil, and they should do evil things. So I got into the world of snake crimes.
Snake crimes.
Snake crimes.
Snake crimes. And really, the one, and it was like every step of it was just so easy and perfect, is you can all, if you can train snakes, you can so easily rob a bank. It's like child's play. All right, first off, getting into the bank. Obviously, snakes are good at getting places. Like, they can climb trees, they can dig, they can just get into tiny spaces. Like, the ventilation, like getting into the ventilation of a building is like just child's play to a snake. And like at the same time, like, they're not gonna like see it on like the cameras. Like what do you do if you're like monitoring a bank and you see a snake on a camera?
It depends on where it is.
Anywhere. Like, if there's a snake like in the vault.
Okay, I'm gonna ask some questions, certainly.
What, are you gonna go get it?
I'm not gonna just ignore it.
Just be like, oh, it's a snake, let it do its thing.
Yeah, but I mean, they're gonna, either way, you're gonna avoid the cameras anyway, because you're gonna be over in the ventilation mostly. I think it's not gonna get through.
Yeah.
And an added bonus, because, you know, Ben, you're talking about the infrared vision, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're also good against infrared vision, because as cold-blooded reptiles, they don't show up on infrared cameras very much.
This is true.
So that extra, any infrared cameras in the bank, they are going to be able to get through. But say things go slightly south, dealing with the guards. So there's really two main ways you can take something down with a snake. You can poison it, or you can squeeze it. And I think you kind of want to do both, because in order to squeeze a human, you need a really big snake. The one I've chosen is the green anaconda, which can get up to, as one of the biggest snakes in the world, can get up to like 30 feet long. Not a lot of them get that big. So, like, they're usually in, like, the 15 to 20 foot range, which is huge. That's a lot of snake.
Pretty big.
And they have been clocked at squeezing prey at 84 PSI, which I'm not quite sure how to put that into perspective, but basically take one square inch, like, imagine, like, one square inch on your body, and imagine, like, there's a little stand, and then you put, like, 8 bowling balls on it. And now put another one right next to it with another 8 bowling balls, another one right next with another 8 bowling balls, and then put them all around your body and compressing you.
Bowling ball man.
You are surrounded by bowling balls. And then you're going to want to have these, you don't want to just have this one anaconda like squeezing this one guy for the whole time. So we're going to want to have your poisoner. And so I just picked the deadliest and most aggressive snake, or one of the deadliest, but also one of the most aggressive snakes, the black mamba, whose bite can kill a human being in less than 30 minutes. Which is pretty good, because also, like, halfway through that poisoning, you're just completely incapacitated. It's, like, 15-minute time, like, a squeeze to hold them in place, poison, and then, like, 10, 15 minutes, you can move on.
So you don't care about killing them. Like, some robbers are like, I won't kill, but I'll, like, knock them out.
Like, the last couple guards, you could probably, like, still squeeze, but, I mean, you might, like, you can train the snakes, but they might just want to kill. They're pretty evil. And one other thing, even if the guards try to run away from the black mamba snakes, they can move up to 12 and a half miles an hour.
Jesus.
which is not a great fact that I want to know in my life, because I'd like to imagine I could run away from a snake. And clearly I cannot.
Yeah, I know.
So we snakes, obviously, they're very mobile. They're very deadly. We could get in. We could infiltrate. We could deal with some guards. But the important thing is getting into the vault. So I explored two ways. So the first one was, it turns out snakes actually will burrow and, like, sort of hibernate in the winter. And they'll actually dig down, like, 5 to 6 feet into the soil to do that. Because it's, like, you know, protects them from the very cold temperatures of the winter. And I couldn't find out any facts on how deep they could theoretically go. But I can imagine if they could dig 5 feet, they could dig a little bit more than that. And bank vaults aren't that far into the ground. I mean,
that's dirt, though. Can they go through the floor?
So then you go, then you have, like, the concrete and the steel vault. So now I'm starting to look at snakes that spit venom, because you don't need to do it quickly if you're, like, you know, have just a snake hole that's, like, spitting venom on a on a big piece of metal, and you can just like go in, and every day the snake goes down, he spits some more acid on there, slowly dissolving it away. Unfortunately, it turns out like snake venom is pretty specific to killing like animals and things. Like a lot of them are like neurotoxins, and there's actually quite a few different kinds, but not too many are very acidic. Like the lowest pH, or so the highest acidity I could find, is 5.8 on the pH scale of, you know, 1 to 14, where 7 is the middle. And 5.8 is not that high. It's not going to get you through steel. So that plan's kind of right out. But then we get to the other thing that snakes can do that is super cool. So you ever see like like the snake charmer?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know what the biggest fucking lie about snake charmers is? Snakes can't hear. The snakes can literally not hear the melody of the snake charmer. What the snakes are responding to is the motion of the, what is it, the trumpet? The flute? The flute.
It's not a trumpet. I know that.
yeah, so they respond to the motion of the flute. But that does not mean snakes cannot hear things at all. So what snakes can do is they can use their jaws to sense vibrations in the ground. So they have they don't have ears, but they have the inner part of the ear that like senses vibrations. So they have the structure that we have, both no ear canal for the sounds to get in. So actually they rest their jaw on the ground and they can feel like minute vibrations and able to pick that up. So what this is absolutely perfect for, breaking into a vault, because what you're trying to listen for, like where you have like, you know, the stethoscope up on the vault to hear the tumblers turn, snakes can just hear that naturally. All you gotta do is have one snake like just put his face up against the vault and start turning the dial with its tail until it gets to where it needs to go. And so with that, you're into the vault, no problem. And then as far as taking the money, snakes are pretty good at swallowing things. Get your big anaconda buddies back in. And each anaconda can swallow up to 130 pounds.
So which a ton of money. I'm imagining the security guard in the security room watching the camera footage, sees a snake go by. In your scenario, he ignores it. And then
so he doesn't have to ignore the snake. I would probably ignore the first snake because that's got to not be my problem.
And then like a few minutes later, the snake comes the other way with like a big bulge in its stomach.
It was very clearly a duffel bag. Holy shit, actually, wait. So did you guys see the thing where snakes eat things and then let it just like dissolve inside of them, basically digest it. And if they get like a predator comes up on them, they just like regurgitate it and flee. So they could actually swallow like a duffel bag, go into the bake, spit it back up, fill it up, swallow it back. Boom, done.
I mean, they could also swallow all the money.
Yeah, but then it's not like in a duffel bag.
You need like a protective barrier.
Like a duffel bag. Snakes, it's right there.
Snake, like I think money's pretty resilient actually to like these kinds of things. And snake stomach acid only works so quickly.
But like you're going to have to put in a duffel bag eventually. You may as well do it at the start.
Could you have like the snake like first swallow like a really big condom? And then just have, and like plastic line the stomach of the snake.
This seems unsafe for the snake.
Yeah, you're sacrificing a snake.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I would only do it if they could survive it. Actually, no, I don't give a shit. Snakes are terrible.
How many snakes do you think you need for this job?
Well, okay, so you would need some... I think you need a small, like an infiltration team. And they can do, like, the little odd jobs, too. Like, you could have your snakes go up and, like, you know, take out security cameras as needed. And just, like, kind of, like, I don't know, like, crush them. Like, because they can slide up the wall and, like, go up to the... up onto the camera and just like crush it. You can like, so I don't know exactly what, it'd be bank specific and it's hard to find exact bank security specifications.
For some reason.
As we found out before on the show. So say an initial strike force, like 3 or 4 scout snakes. You're going to need probably just like 2 venom snakes, 2 of the black mambas. Cause like they can bite and go into the next one. And then I guess it depends how much money you're planning on stealing. I don't know how much 130 pounds of money is, but it feels like a lot of money.
Yeah.
So like 5 anacondas, like 2 black mambas, 4 scout snakes. That's 11 snakes total. And that's really going to be all you need. I guess like whatever snake has the best jaw hearing, you could have like one specialist snake to break into the vault.
Which of these snakes is theoretically one job away from retirement?
Ooh, definitely the oldest anaconda snake.
That's fair. I was thinking it was going to be the one who is doing the safe sensing, but the oldest anaconda also works.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the oldest anaconda, and he's going to be like the last one to like fill up on money, and he's going to like stay to get like one last diamond because that's like his final score, and then as he's like a step behind all the other snakes getting out, like the door, the security door will finally catch on, and like you'll get stuck in the door, and he's the only snake that'll get caught.
Oh no.
And I don't know, not arrested, just probably killed. It's a snake. But I mean, it's kind of a low risk crime for you, the
yeah,
the
you're not really doing mind. Anything. You're just like sitting back watching.
Although then again, you could just very easily like be the snake guy in town, because I can't imagine that's the, like, you keep your snake training a secret from everybody.
Right, yeah.
It's like, oh man, a bunch of snakes robbed the bank. It's like, wow, who could it be? Oh, maybe it's Snake Marcus.
Snake Man. It totally seems like a Batman villain or something.
Yeah, this is like a really like, this is the villain that is like at the start of the movie or comic book or whatever that gets taken care of in the first, you know, 10 minutes and then is never heard
the
from again.
The throwaway villain.
Yeah. Like it starts up like in the middle of the heist and then it gets dismantled by Batman in like 3 pages. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I mean, that's my snake crimes, guys. This one I think was like, it's a little less foolproof because it is still robbing a bank with snakes and there are things that can go wrong.
There are. Yes.
For example, like an electronic security system is going to be pretty tough for a snake. But I guess they could take the key cards.
How would they swipe them?
They got pretty agile tails.
Can they hold a card, though, with their tail?
Two snakes could.
Two snakes could carry it together.
Then it's just, like, two fingers.
Yeah, so I'll need to add two snakes to my party of just Buddy. I'll just call them, I guess, the left and right-hand man snakes.
Right.
I'll call them Thumb and Forefinger. Be the two snakes there. Any other flaws in my bank heist?
Probably.
Because I like to address them before I commit my snakes to the endeavor.
Probably, but I can't think of any right now.
You've heard it here, folks. My plan is foolproof. My co-hosts both agree.
What if the snakes turn on you?
Well, that's the hypothetical is that you can perfectly train them.
Oh, yeah, you can perfectly train them. So they wouldn't turn on you. Never mind.
Yeah, they wouldn't do anything you didn't teach them. So, bam! Robbed a bank. I made out the best. Chris terrified all the people at all the sports stadiums.
I made, like, a party company for long-term success.
No one would hire you!
They would totally hire me.
No one would hire you twice.
No one would hire you! Yeah.
Look, confetti is like, it makes a huge mess. It's a huge pain to clean up. Snakes you don't have to clean up. They'll just slither away.
And then what, you go get and train new snakes? That's not a good business.
No, they slither back to you, and then you use them again.
I think riots cause a lot of incidental damage when they start. And so you might be looking at some insurance problems.
You have a very complicated and verbose waiver you have them sign first.
Look, they're not dangerous to people.
Your waiver has to be, I waive all my rights, period, signature. It's the only way you're going to get away with it. There are so many concurrent, like, crimes that happen when you release a blimp full of snakes on an unsuspecting populace.
Well, it'll be suspecting. It'll be, I'm advertising, that's my service.
I have to imagine it'll be attendees that don't know what's coming, though.
I would hope so.
I guess I don't really expect confetti to fall, ever.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't expect that confetti to be snakes.
All right, we gotta move on from the terrible, terrible Chris. It's the terrible, terrible idea Chris had. Chris, would you rather only be able to whisper or only be able to shout?
So it's like, so you can't talk normally is what you're saying.
You can't talk at a normal volume. So either, and I'm going to say it's a pretty quiet whisper or like a full on shout.
Right. Okay. I would say whisper. I think shouting is just, I mean, obviously whispering has its problems, but shouting would just be perceived as like obnoxious. I don't want to be obnoxious.
I would like to be perceived though.
I mean, you can get up close to people and like whisper in their ear and that's how you communicate. You can still communicate.
That's way, yeah, that's not obnoxious at all or creepy.
And you can like, I mean, people aren't going to get mad at you. They'll just be like, oh, that's the guy, that's the shy guy. He whispers.
I think I'd rather shout.
Like nobody's,
maybe because I just shout a lot in my life already.
Nobody's going to want to be around you. Like in your office, people aren't going to want to be around you.
I mean, there's some really loud people in my office that are just shout all the time anyway when they're on the phone and things. So you can put up with it.
Like, if you only whisper, then you can still enjoy other people's company and they won't mind you being around.
Actually, no. If you whisper, you cannot make a work call. No, they can't hear you on the end of the line.
I mean, you don't need to have a job where you make calls.
It does limit your options a lot, though. While shouting all the time, I think increases your job options. Like, you can be like an auctioneer or a salesperson.
I don't think you could be a very good salesperson. I'm going to go ahead and interject there.
Yeah, shouting to a customer isn't great.
A used car salesman, perhaps.
What about you, Ben? What do you think?
I'm really torn on this one because I feel like a lot of the time you're going to have to resort to nonverbal communication anyway. And I'm trying to decide which is more of an impact, because I definitely see both of your guys' points. My gut says whisper, because you can just like, you can have a conversation with a person, which you can't really do with shouting.
Unless you're like far away from someone.
Right. Which seems awkward.
Can you do local soundproofing? Like, put a bucket with insulation over your head sometimes.
So you just like yell into the helmet and it sounds normal to everyone?
Well, it's gonna sound a little muffled, I imagine, but yeah. Like that ostrich pillow, the big gray thing where you can put your arms in it and like sleep at the airport or whatever they claim you can do.
Alternate question, could you just carry a megaphone around with you and speak into that when you have to be heard, if you're whispering?
How well does a megaphone...
What happens if you whisper into a megaphone?
Yeah, I've never seen someone do that.
It's not the best. It's not the best, I'm not going to lie. But it does work.
I mean, they have those things for like people that smoke that like you don't actually have to use your vocal cords. You just make the mouth motions and then it says what you're mouthing. You could use that.
I think that's cheating. I think that's cheating the hypothetical a little bit. So here's my thing. So would you rather the when you are meeting someone new and you need to talk at a regular volume, would you rather see the other person like put a muffling contraption in front of their mouth, or would you rather them pull out a megaphone and point it towards you?
I mean, that's like a different... So I think we're getting away from the hypothetical a little bit, because
yeah.
If like you're first meeting someone, would you rather them shout at you or would you rather them like lean in and whisper?
I'm going to go whisper. Final answer. I just think that that's more socially, like people just think you're shy or whatever. I think that's just much more socially like navigatable than yelling at people.
I mean, I guess you can shout in like a non-aggressive way. Like it can sound jolly, I guess. But I'm also leaning towards whisper.
I think it's whisper. I'm just seeing like you're at a restaurant, you're meeting your girlfriend's parents for the first time. They walk in and you just start shouting.
Yeah, like any first encounters, the person's going to hate you.
Yeah, but you're not really making... I mean, like whispering is also not a great impression. Like,
but it's not a hate impression.
Oh, that rhymed.
Go for the great, not for the hate.
Yeah, it's a good slogan.
I don't know. I think it's just because I grew up like up until like late high school. I was very shy and like didn't talk to anybody for anything. So I like don't ever want to go back to being like not making myself heard like in groups, you know?
Right.
So maybe just me personally, I like to whispering seems worse to me than like just being slightly obnoxious. Because obviously I've made my peace with being that way in my daily life already. So yeah, personal preference. I'm going to go shout.
Fair enough.
And me and Ben are whisper.
We are whisper.
Have I picked the opposite of you two like the last like four
times?
Pretty
much.
In a row now?
Maybe like once you weren't, but like all the other ones, yeah.
There may have been one where we all agreed, but I think when there's been dissent, it's always been you.
Man, it's just so good to be right all the time. You guys don't know. And that'll bring us to the end of our episode. But before we go... I want you guys to let you know we updated our Patreon levels because we have got some more. We gave it some thought. We added some new stuff.
Yeah, we kind of started our Patreon initially just like out of the blue and didn't really think about it too much. And we started to think that we wanted to like add more stuff. So we've added more stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a extra bonus behind the scenes content. There was a an announcement by Patreon that they were changing their pricing structure, and if you got in before they changed it, you got grandfathered into the old pricing structure, which is better. And so we hopped on that, made our Patreon kind of like on the back of a napkin, but now we're starting to flesh it out and get some, you know, things that are actually worth subscribing to our podcast for. So without further ado, Our updated tiers are tier number one, hypothetical cool at $1 or more per month. This gives you access to the voting power. So you get $1, one vote. So what you get to do is you get to go onto our Patreon page and you can vote on questions that we do for the show, other design choices we make for the podcast going forward, and anything else we can think to put onto our Patreon for a vote to the people. In addition, at this tier and every other tier, we are doing milestone gifts. So after your Patreon account has donated a total amount over any amount of time, you'll get rewards at different tiers. For example, at $20, you get a sticker pack with fancy stickers of me and Ben and Chris and our logo and a cool flying pig with a jetpack. If you keep going, $50, we'll have a Patreon exclusive t-shirt that is not available in the store, custom design. And then if you are one of the better Patreons, you make it all the way to $100 total donations, you will earn your very own certified Hypothetipal Award. Fancy glass block award. It looks awesome, Chris. You did a really great job.
I mean, I didn't really have to do much to make it look cool, but it looks cool.
It looks really fancy. It's like gold. This one says Ben Storms on it. Yours probably won't say Ben Storms. It's going to have your own specific name engraved onto it.
Yeah, if you want your name on it, we can put your name on it. And I want to make it clear that these dollar amounts aren't monthly. We like keep track of everything you donate.
Yes, the milestone gifts at $20, $1,500 are total donations over any amount of time. So if you change your donation amounts, you do not lose your contributions to the milestone. And if you increase, you've already got a head start from your prior donations. So $1 a month, besides the milestone gifts, you get your voting power. If you join our hypothetical cooler tier at $3 a month, you get your voting rights. You get early access, so you will get be able to download our episodes one day before everybody else does. So when they listen to it, you can be like, yeah, I know all about snakes already.
You could spoil it for them if you're a jerk.
Don't do that, please.
Yes, be the jerk. Shout it to the heavens or whisper to the heavens, whichever one you chose. And in addition, you will also get 20% discount on everything in our merch store.
Which also, is also
we
new.
We have merch now.
We never announced that, apparently.
We have a merch store. We got t-shirts, we got stickers, we got mugs, we got all the shit that they let you just put your logo on and sell on demand.
You can find that at www.nerdchomp.com/AH store.
Yes, AH stands for Absurd Hypotheticals. That's what you don't forget. And then finally, if you are in our top tier, the hypothetical coolest, you will get everything from the below tiers. But also, you'll get an exclusive behind-the-scenes episode every month where we go into the making of the podcast, we go into how we pick questions, rejected questions, things that go wrong, and what we actually think of each other's answers for different questions. And it's a bit more casual. It's a cool hangout with us. We try to make it a bit more personal for you devoted fans. And so, yeah, go to www.patreon.com/absurdhypotheticals and become a patron. We would just love your support, and we love making this for you, so it would be so good to have money. That'd be great.
If you're too lazy to type that in, there'll be a link in the description.
Yes. Click it. I'm pointing downwards where the link is. You can't see it because this is an audio medium, but it will be down there.
You are actually just pointing down at your crotch?
Fuck, I am. You can't click my dick, so click our Patreon page. Well, whether you donate or not, please feel free to join us next week where we answer the following question. What are nature's best and worst dads? Happy Father's Day, everybody.